This is CliffCentral.com.
What up, it's ASAF and you're listening to the GT Vibe. GT, you can tune in every Friday at 1 p.m. on Cliff Central. Yes, sir.
Welcome to the Gilmore T Vibe here on Cliff Central. So remember, every Friday at 1 p.m. Central African Time, we'll be broadcasting live on www.cliffcentral.com. Please get a hold of us to know what's happening in Zimbabwe by Zimbabweans and also across the world from Zimbabweans. And this week, I'm broadcasting from one of the oldest locations of human existence with over 200 million people living in it. It's one of the most populated and popular African nations, and it's also known for its oil, corruption, terrorism, and also the entertainment scene. This place that I'm broadcasting from is called Nigeria, and I'm very, very, very excited to be having a conversation with the Zimbabwean ambassador to Nigeria, His Excellency Lovemo Mazemo, and also I'm just going to be talking a little bit about how I happen to be here in Nigeria. So let's talk Zimbabwe. So you know what? A few months back last year, I happened to meet this incredible young designer from Nigeria. Her name is Nye Makanosisi. She runs a brand called Makanisi Collections, which basically specializes in handmade handbags, accessories, shoes, and they incorporate leather and African print. So this brand has been existing for quite some time now, and I happened to be here in Nigeria to be attached with her factory just to get to understand how the Nigerian fashion industry works, and also how the whole manufacturing industry in Nigeria works and how she's selling her products. So I'm going to be having a conversation with her next week, and I'm so excited to just understand how she's running and hustling her business as a young entrepreneur living in Nigeria. So before we even get very excited about Makanisi, and I'm very excited obviously to be attached with her, and I'm very, 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 very gratified that she had to open her doors for me to be here for the next 2 weeks. But before we do that, we're gonna have to get a better understanding of how Zimbabwe and Nigerian relationship is like. What can we learn from each other as countries? What can Zimbabwe learn from Nigeria? What can Nigeria learn from Zimbabwe? What are the characteristics that best describe our nations, and what things do we have in common as African nations? Obviously, with very high level of corruption, just like many other nations across the world, this is the case of Zimbabwe and Nigeria. So let's get into it with a conversation with His Excellency Lovemo Mazemo, the Zimbabwean ambassador to Nigeria.
I'm doing well.
Thank you so much for making time.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have you.
This is very exciting.
Absolutely, it's an exciting place.
I saw your face was sort of like, okay, when I was mentioning the oil, the corruption, and the terrorism, and entertainment, things that are associated with Nigeria, you're sort of like, okay, this is interesting.
Well, I'm just admiring how fast you have learned since Saturday.
No, I mean, there's so much that you can learn with. We've got so many Nigerians across the world. I mean,
absolutely.
We have Nigerians in Zimbabwe, and we see how hardworking they are, and also we see the corruption that Nigerians come with. The same as Zimbabweans also. We also have our fair share of corruption. So it's something that is not a secret per se.
Absolutely not.
So you have been working in the diplomacy world for quite some time, and you recently were in Zambia for over 7 years, and recently moved to Lagos in Nigeria. How has been that shift for you though?
It's quite a big shift, Abuja rather.
Yes.
It's quite a significant shift. In our neighborhood in Southern Africa, I think cultural differences are not that big.
Yes, yes.
After all, Zimbabwe, Zambia actually used to be in the same federation.
Yes, yes.
We have known each other much, much longer, and our cultures, our diets, and so forth do share a lot of similarities. So Nigeria was quite another part of the world.
It was quite a huge climate
step. Is very different.
Yeah,
the cultures are different, the diets are different, work ethic. Maybe even our values also differ here and there. So it's quite an interesting move.
It is. But just take me back to a little bit when you were a teenager. Have you always wanted to work in this space, or was it ever a dream, or you had a different dream completely?
Well, growing up as a teenager, I wasn't quite sure exactly what I was going to do.
Uh-huh.
growing up, I actually had an inclination towards the heart sciences and so forth.
Wow.
And I actually pursued that right up to high school.
Okay.
But at some point, I grew an affinity for this type of work. I guess the people I spent time with also had an influence on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I began to like it. And I think it was a good choice for me.
Okay, okay. You know, Nigeria has got so many characteristics that people know it for. And one thing for sure that we have to acknowledge is the oil. I was shocked on Saturday when we were buying fuel, and when I was calculating, it's literally less than a dollar when you're buying a liter of fuel. When you go back home to Zimbabwe, it's like $1.30. It hasn't gone up anymore. How best can we sort of like also leverage from this resource that Nigerians have, and then maybe sort of like try to create something affordable for ourselves in Zimbabwe?
Well, I think this is one of the issues that take us into the debate of indigenization and so forth, that if any people do have some wealth, some resources that they have, at least they must do whatever they can to make sure that the people benefit from it, even within one given country. If you have a resource in one particular corner, and companies are actually prospering out of it, it would be a good idea for them to, you know, plow back in and people to benefit. So oil, in the case of Nigeria, is one such.
I think
it is one outstanding commodity where the people have managed to persuade the government that at least in that sector, that the people have some relief.
All right.
But of course, it means the government has to pay huge subsidies.
Oh, they do?
Because they import the purified petrol. They export, largely they export most of their raw.
All right.
They import the finished product, so they still have to subsidize.
But it's still affordable for the Nigerians.
Because the government is paying for it.
Okay.
Yes,
okay.
It is affordable for the people, no doubt about that.
So, but then in Zimbabwe also, we can't, we do have tourism that's booming in Zimbabwe.
Yes,
we have our diamonds, we've got our platinum.
That's right.
We've got our tobacco. So from you're working in Nigeria and seeing how the government has been working in terms of oil, how best can we also make use of these resources that we have in Zimbabwe to make sure that they benefit the average person in Zimbabwe?
I think there's a growing debate back home in Zimbabwe, actually, that every province, every area where there is some economic activity should actually benefit from it. Before that, we were already coming up with the trust funds for the diamond sector, the platinum, and so forth, and that had already begun to work, although many companies have not strictly adhered to it. But that's the whole idea, and I think there is a very sober and serious debate going on right now within government that the communities in which there is a resource, there is an economic activity, should actually benefit from it. And I think we are serious about that.
I was sort of like, maybe in the are we progressing in that? Because
it's a recent discussion in government.
So it hasn't spilled out.
Cabinet. Exactly.
Okay.
It's a recent discussion in cabinet and in government, and I believe it is going to be heard, and it will have full expression
and be implemented. Because when you talk about that, I mean, Zimbabwe is known obviously for the Victoria Falls, for the Wangi National Park, Matopos, and a lot of other places. But the unfortunate thing, I'm glad that you mentioned that there's a discussion going on within government.
Yeah.
The unfortunate thing is that we as Zimbabweans hardly go to these tourism destinations. There's no domestic tourism going on for the Zimbabweans themselves, because it's way expensive. When you think of going to the Victoria Falls just to see the falls, as a local you pay $7. But imagine if we bring it down, how many people are going to be able to visit these spaces? And also, when we go out, we're fully talking about things that we actually know and we've been to.
That's very true. Actually, I think over the past years, we have seen development in that direction. Domestic tourism is being promoted.
It is, it is.
The airlines should come in, the restaurants should come in, the hotels also, and the resorts themselves. And I think we, honestly, even looking at the figures and statistics, we have begun to see a growth in terms of domestic tourism, which I think is very, very, very positive. In that area of tourism and conservation, I remember the only thing we had was like the campfire project, where people who cohabited with wildlife of any nature were encouraged and educated
about
the significance of conservation.
Mm.
And in a way, it's part of the earnings
mm.
from that industry where being plant back into the community.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we just need to expand.
And explore more of that.
Exactly.
I mean, Lagos is like one of, is known as the Africa's airport. Basically, it's the economic focal point, not only for Nigerians, but for other people that are coming from outside.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that Nigeria has is it's very much open to people coming from outside. Unlike our neighboring country, South Africa, unfortunately, I have to say that you find that it's very difficult as a foreigner to actually exist in that space. What can Zimbabweans take advantage of the fact that Lagos in Nigeria is one of the spaces that is very much open for anyone else to come and work in?
I think there's a lot to learn from that. One of the things I have seen about Nigeria and the Nigerian economy,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking about Lagos, the second city, but the business hub,
mm-hmm.
is the magnitude of their informal sector.
Yes.
Right. And I think on that score, there's a lot to learn for us as Zimbabwe.
Mm.
I'm not advocating that we should informalize. I'm simply...
But we're already informalized in Zimbabwe.
I'm already acknowledging the fact that
okay.
we already have
a huge, thriving informal
mm. sector, and that sector must actually be supported
okay.
because people have created employment for themselves and
people
for others,
are surviving.
And they are contributing to the economy. They are taking care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I will draw some lessons from the Nigerian experience.
Mm-hmm.
I think in the case of Zimbabwe, the stakeholders in the informal sector,
mm-hmm.
the moment they hear about company registration,
there's
only one thing on their mind. You want to tax us.
Yeah, it's Zimbra.
Right.
It's Zimbra
exactly.
coming into play.
Now, there are lots of lessons to learn. From this side, a lot of the micro, small and medium enterprises here
mm-hmm.
are not afraid
mm-hmm.
of being registered.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen from experience that when you are registered, you can be banked.
Yes.
You can be insured.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment your activities are visible in terms of your cash flow
yes.
in the banking system now has confidence to actually extend loans.
And give you for you to expand.
Absolutely, for you to expand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is the important thing there. Because when you do that, you actually create facilities for the informal sector,
yes,
this
yes,
macro
yes,
small,
yes, yes.
to be incubated.
Mm.
And they can actually grow and thrive into big companies.
Mm-hmm.
These and we in Zimbabwe have a number of empowerment projects for women, for
yes,
the youth,
yes,
and so forth.
That, yeah.
And there's a lot of that. For example, most of these programs have revolving funds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from this side, when this seed money or loans are given to the small actors,
mm-hmm.
they don't have to be in liquid cash form,
okay,
which is which goes with a good measure of risk,
mm-hmm.
but they can be in the form of equipment,
mm-hmm.
in the form of tools.
And I think that's actually the best way of
Absolutely.
Promoting people.
Or in the form of workshop space.
Yes.
Because
yes.
when you do that, you make this actor step into a productive environment
mm.
immediately
mm.
and you
mm.
give them a better chance to succeed
yes.
and grow. You minimize chances of deviating the capital that you have given to them
mm.
and you also increase the chances of them actually being able to pay back.
Mm.
So there's a lot that we can actually learn in terms of getting them registered,
mm-hmm.
getting them banked, getting them insured, and then their performance is assessed. And
also accountability. I think once
Absolutely.
You are registered and you are insured and you also have a bank account, then there's some sort of accountability going on
Exactly.
and you're able to sustain yourself. So would you possibly say there's a lot more of conscientization that needs to be done
yes,
in terms of our informal sector in Zimbabwe, because we can't run away from the fact that the formal sector in Zimbabwe had such
Absolutely.
A huge meltdown.
Absolutely.
And right now people are sustaining themselves through the informal
yeah,
sector.
That's right.
So we might need to just recognize it and just maybe conscientize people on the need to
Absolutely.
Formalize that
yeah.
sector.
We need to train, educate, equip them, and give them space to grow
mm-hmm.
and thrive. Yeah, the informal sectors are big almost everywhere.
Yeah.
In Nigeria, in South Africa, in Kenya, all our big economies,
mm-hmm.
informal sectors are a good, they're a huge percentage,
mm-hmm.
and they should be encouraged and empowered.
So So I guess Zimbabwe and Nigeria are almost like on the same level, only that Nigeria is 200 million plus people that stay in it.
That's right. Lagos alone is 20-something million.
Isn't that as big as Zimbabwe?
Almost double the population of Zimbabwe. So, yeah.
I was telling the Uber driver that he was asking me how many people stay in Zimbabwe. I'm like, I think it's about 10 to 15 million. He was like, that's just as small as maybe half of Lagos. I'm like, yes, we're not exactly that many, but it's a beautiful country for you to go to. So for somebody who has no idea what the responsibility of an embassy, because now you're speaking on behalf of other embassies, what do they do? Like right now, there's the embassy of Zimbabwe in Abuja.
Right.
What is the responsibility of the embassy in terms of, I don't know, the responsibility of it here in Abuja?
Right. The embassy is deployed by the government.
Yes.
To another government, mm-hmm. accredited to another government, mm-hmm. Principally to promote relations between the two.
Mm-hmm.
And these relations do not just limit themselves to government-to-government relationships.
Yes.
Yes, that is the key, that's the launch, but governments create bilateral frameworks
mm-hmm.
within which their people
mm-hmm.
can then relate. Mm-hmm. So we virtually represent the interests of all Zimbabweans,
okay.
whether you're in government or in private sector, the students, the tourists, the mm-hmm. visitors, the mm-hmm. expatriates, all Zimbabweans, this is home,
mm-hmm.
and we're interested in getting to know what they're doing and what yes, we can do to
exactly.
assist them. If a company,
do you actually do something if they approach and they want you to assist them?
Absolutely, we do. We
okay.
all the information that we can make available, we do make available.
All right.
All the connections and the contacts that we can provide for them, we do that. If a company wants to come and plant in here,
oh yes,
yes, that's
you are the one to do the research for them.
We can do
okay.
research for them. We can do market surveys for them. We can mm-hmm. identify who are your competitors
okay,
in the
okay.
sector that you are bringing in. How can you have an edge? Is it your packaging? Is
mm.
it the quality of your product?
Mm.
Is it your price?
Mm.
So we do that. That is critical. We do the same for students who are scouting around for opportunities.
Yes,
we
yes.
can identify for them what schools, if there are any scholarship opportunities,
mm.
definitely that is our must too. So yes, and it's really a pleasure to do that. We are always excited when
yes, that sounds good.
Whether as an individual or as a company.
Absolutely. Yeah. But what's the hardest thing? Because I mean, obviously there's a lot of attention in terms of international media on Zimbabwe. We recently went through a transitional government or a change of leadership
right.
or whatever you want to call
yes.
it. And obviously, that doesn't stop people from making a lot of inquiries and asking
right.
questions, because when you watch international media, you think, even myself when I'm in Zimbabwe, I'm thinking, which place are they talking about?
Exactly.
Because I do not see these things that I see on international media. So how do you then handle this pressure?
It is a lot of pressure. I think, as you are already recognizing, one of the major disadvantages, particularly for small countries,
mm.
is that the so-called international media is resident somewhere else. It's
yes.
not that international in terms of its residence.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that international in terms of its coverage.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that international in terms of its fairness.
Mm.
But it is owned by somebody, controlled by somebody.
Yeah. It's a propaganda.
And in many cases, it does fly a certain flag.
Yes.
So when for those of us coming from small countries,
uh-huh.
Then we are not that competitive on the information market.
Mm-hmm.
Right, because there are those that are bigger and louder and
obviously, listen to much more.
And if these media houses actually come from the same sources where investors and traders come,
where money is.
Come from, then again, that's a major disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some of the challenges
mm-hmm.
that we face. Like you say, you know exactly what your country is like, you know exactly what history is going on
mm-hmm.
there, and you know exactly what should be portrayed,
mm-hmm.
Which will actually appetize
mm-hmm.
investors.
But when this happens, then how do you handle that? Because obviously when there's a lot of drama that happens in Zimbabwe,
yes.
you are here, questions come to you, how do you handle this?
To begin with, we have to continue pumping the correct information.
All right.
That's number one.
Okay.
Number two, we encourage people to visit
mm-hmm.
Zimbabwe,
mm-hmm.
see for themselves. It's
mm-hmm.
conference diplomacy. Any chance that there's a conference going on,
mm-hmm.
we encourage people to go. In fact, we keep publicizing the calendar of events.
Mm-hmm.
Back home for the various sectors, we have your ZITF International
yes,
Trade
yes,
Fair.
Yes.
You have the Travel Expo.
There's Sanganani going on right now.
Right now, you have the Mine Entra, which is for the mining and transport engineering, and so forth. You have the agricultural show in Harare, you have the Harare Carnival, you have the Victoria Falls Carnival. So all these events, you have Haifa, you have the book fair in August. So all these events, we popularize them.
That's good.
And market them, because if people are planning to visit and we kind of know what their interests are, then we cause them to target their visit to coincide with some particular event which is of great interest to them. And that way they see Zimbabwe at their best in terms of what meets their interests. So yes, we keep promoting the truth and we
the truth. Depending on who's telling the truth, who's voicing out. But I think the most important thing that you just touched on is also for us to be able to... what I like, especially with my show, is the fact that it's the voices of Zimbabwe. So you are based in Nigeria, but you're voicing out on the situation in Nigeria and the things that you see. And it's very important for someone gets to hear from a Zimbabwean voice about Zimbabwe and of Zimbabwe. But at the same time, you touched on how you have the Haifas, the festivals, the trade fairs that are going on. Right. I would actually maybe urge people to actually reach out to embassies outside their country so that they... put information out. So if you know there's Nigeria, Gambia, Senegal, maybe reach out to the embassies and send out your information there.
Correct.
So our education as Zimbabweans should not be only by the textbook. It's also about us implementing that and being proactive.
Possibly. That's very correct. I think we need to improve our linkages, our networking, and the people that we meet, and to take advantage of every opportunity, every contact, every networking facility we have to market ourselves as a country. I must say, when we talk about people visiting, when a country has been maligned in the media, you can invite anybody you want, because in all honesty, visiting Zimbabwe is a pleasant surprise.
It's shocking for a lot of people.
It's a pleasant surprise. So I'm not hesitant at
all
to invite people and get people to visit Zimbabwe. I'm not saying we're perfect. Yes, we're working hard to improve ourselves as a country, as an economy, but already there's a lot for people to see, and there's a lot of opportunities which people can actually consider investing in.
But talking about visiting, I strongly feel that our systems in the African continent don't really promote intercultural exchange, because for one to fly from Zimbabwe coming to Lagos, they have to pay, or coming to Abuja, they have to pay over $1,400. What is it that we can put in place to promote intercultural dialogue within the African continent? Because Europe only has a Schengen visa, and they're able to move from one place to another. But we in Africa, the only way we don't understand each other and we misunderstand each other is because it's so hard for us to even travel, and we don't get to know each other. What can we do to ease these barriers?
I think there are a number of things that could be done, some of which are already being done. The whole idea of the visa regimes, I think they have to be revisited. There is a push already, which was accepted by the AU itself in the last summit, that we would want to make Africa borderless. Okay, we want to make it easy for our people to move across the border.
But is that practical also? That's the
it
question.
It is practicable. There are security issues which are
clear, which is what I'm thinking of.
This
now
is why it has not happened so fast.
Yes.
But it has happened within regions.
Okay.
In the West African region, for example, among themselves as the ECOWAS, that has already happened. Within SADC, I think we are almost there. Most of our countries can actually visit one another. You don't get to apply for a visa before you start your journey. So I think that's great progress.
Okay, so maybe we need some
communities where people are getting to learn and to know one another and to trust each other's systems. It's already happening. There are issues to do with security. What kind of passports are you issuing? Are they e-readable? Are they easily forged? And so forth. And so we need to standardize our documentation and our systems. That way it will make it much, much easier for people to move across. So yes, the issue of a borderless continent has to be attended. But also the other issue is the open skies issue, where our airlines should have that liberty without necessarily going through stringent applications and so forth, but that we can open our skies and allow our airlines, you know, to move.
Yeah. And I think as Africans, we should control our own things. We should control our own
things. That is critical. That is critical, because one of the things that makes travel difficult is that not enough airlines are coming into our capitals.
Yes.
So there's not much competition. But in regions where you have lots of airlines mm-hmm. moving up and down, mm. then the competition is high,
mm.
and
it's much cheaper.
Our prices go down.
Mm.
Then you will also have people begin to use the smaller aircraft,
mm-hmm.
smaller
mm-hmm.
shuttle mm-hmm. aircraft mm-hmm. between capitals, and not the huge ones that we are, you know, using at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we will slowly have to move to a shuttling facility
that
connects capital to capital.
We need to.
Absolutely, yeah. So I believe there is that awareness already even amongst the leaders on the continent.
Mm-hmm. I hope it moves faster so we can travel a lot more up and down.
I hope so too.
Yeah. And you touched, when you were just talking about this, we touched on security. And one thing that Nigeria is known for is the terrorism, Boko Haram.
Yes.
And, I mean, international media has also pumped it very so much that even us as Africans were scared to come to Nigeria. When I was coming to Nigeria, people asked me, are you sure you're going to Abuja? I'm like, yes, I'm going to Abuja. Are you sure that you really want to go there? And I was like, yes, I was there. But you, as a representative of Zimbabweans in Abuja, in Nigeria, what's the state of, how is the Boko Haram situation? And as it, can Zimbabweans come? Because one thing for sure is, like, your family will not allow you to just jump if they see these things on TV.
It is normal for people to be apprehensive and mm-hmm. to worry, because the information you get is exactly that. Mm-hmm. It is true, the mm-hmm. Boko Haram issue is a big security threat in the
mm-hmm.
country.
Mm-hmm.
However, it does not embrace or cover the whole nation.
Mm-hmm.
The northeastern part of Nigeria is the most affected.
Okay.
Here and there, you might find some that were stray and trying to do a strike here,
mm.
a bomb blast there,
mm.
but it is really the northeastern part of the country
mm-hmm.
which is
mm-hmm.
affected. Of course, it does affect the rest of the country, that people are no longer that confident,
mm-hmm.
particularly foreigners,
yes,
to
yes,
say come
course,
and be tourists
course,
or travel on the highways and so forth. So yes, it has impacted movement, it has impacted the economy, it has also impacted the way people abroad view the country and the security perception.
But do you think maybe it's been over publicized, almost like when you read about Zimbabwe, you think that people in Zimbabwe are dying, people in Zimbabwe, there's no cars, there's no houses in Zimbabwe. Do you feel it has been over publicized?
It is, just like you're saying, people were asking you, why on earth would you want to go to Abuja? But
yes.
But here we are.
Yeah.
And we are doing business like any other capital.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, but it's also understood that anybody who is receiving just information from far away,
mm-hmm.
they're apprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
That's normal. And people that are on the ground will understand a little better.
Okay.
What the actual situation is like.
Okay. No, it's good. I mean, for me, it's a good experience that I came to Nigeria, because, I mean, obviously, this conversation is carried by some pointers, which I have like two more to go. But I'm just sort of like trying to bring some balance between how also Zimbabwe is going along with what these characteristics are for Nigeria. For example, it's the issues of corruption. The first day I got to Abuja, the guy who picked me up from the airport, he was accused of passing a red robot,
okay.
Or whatever, a policeman rather. So we're driving, and then the robot was green. And then at the same robot, there was a policeman stopping cars. So I don't understand why there was a human being controlling when there was a robot which had turned green, meaning he had to drive.
All right.
So when we just turned, the police stopped and they said, you didn't see that the other police was stopping. I was like, no, but there's a robot, and the robot opened for me. And we had to pay, I think, 15,000 Nairas. For us to, you know, to actually just eventually pass.
Right.
We had to bribe, because they got into the car and then we had to go to some around the corner. Let's talk about corruption and how we can eliminate this, because it's something that is there in the African continent. In Zimbabwe, we do have that too. In Nigeria, we do have that too. But how best can we work towards this corruption that we face as African nations?
Well, when I say African nations, you
see. Oh, in Zimbabwe, is Nigeria, for example. Let's give
it. Well, I've been on quite a few continents.
Oh, yes.
And I've seen it there.
No, it's there everywhere. But then now, bring it down.
We'll focus on ourselves.
Ourselves. Let's focus on Zimbabwe and Nigeria now.
That is okay. First of all, I think it has to be exposed.
Yes.
It has to be exposed. We have to. When it exists, we must acknowledge that it exists. We cannot, you know, push, sweep it under the carpet. Mm-hmm. When it exists, it must. We have to acknowledge it exists. Mm-hmm. We must. We must divulge it. We must expose it.
We but is it something that can actually systems. Work?
Yes, it can work.
Or once yes, you try, because I feel like corruption work. Comes with a whole lot of other things.
I understand that, which makes me go to this point.
Okay.
That
okay.
at any cost, we have to avoid its entrance or birth in any community.
Okay.
Because it has a very sneaky way of becoming a worm and becoming part of a culture.
Okay.
Once it becomes part of a culture, that's when it becomes next to impossible to deal with, because children are literally born into it.
Mm. And so they don't know what's good and what's bad.
Avoiding and fighting it at every cost mm-hmm. is the key. And I think we have to do that. Mm-hmm. We have to do that. Where it exists, we have to fight it openly. But we need systems that work. Systems that work, whether they are accounting, auditing, we need systems that work, that protect us. That is critical. Mm-hmm. But also there is need for education.
Oh, yes.
People must know that when they do that, they're doing it against themselves, against their country, and absolutely, mm-hmm. you cannot grow, you cannot develop.
But what are your comments on, because our president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, is actually very much an advocate of fighting corruption.
Right.
And you, obviously, as a representative of Zimbabwe in Nigeria, where the corruption is skyrocketing, what would be your comments in terms of his efforts to eradicate this corruption in our country, Zimbabwe?
Well, I would actually say to the nation,
let's rally behind
the president mm-hmm. and give support to this. Mm-hmm. Prevention mm-hmm. is really the best. Let's prevent it from entering into any of our circles, whether you're talking about the police, the military, mm-hmm. Law and order, into our private sector as a company, into the mm-hmm. Civil service as government. It just has to be avoided. I think we have to get used to the fact that an office operates. When you go to an office, you expect A, B, C, D.
Yeah.
These, the rates that you pay are A, B, C, D. Mm-hmm. You get a receipt for what you pay, and you get your service because that's your due.
Mm-hmm.
And people that are employed get their salary, and that is what is due to them.
Mm-hmm.
That is critical. Our systems must work. Our systems.
So then it means we need to put out things and for people to know. Because sometimes people say they don't know what they should know.
So it is important to educate.
So then
we
now
we definitely need a campaign.
Okay.
We definitely need a campaign, an awareness campaign, about every office, literally. Mm-hmm. Whether it is an office where birth certificates, passports are issued, an office where driver's licenses are issued,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it is, every one of those offices, there are mission statements, there are expectations.
Right. So people need to read.
Very, very clear. And
yes.
People need to know all about that and be informed
mm-hmm.
so that they just do what is expected of them mm-hmm. by the law. And by law, they must receive
mm-hmm.
the services mm-hmm. that are due to them
mm-hmm.
without having to sweet talk anybody, without having to bribe
anybody.
That it is very clear.
Ambassador, I would like to know we spoke on all these serious issues. I would like to know who's your favorite Nigerian musician or entertainer, because obviously Nigeria is the hub of the entertainment in Africa.
Well, most of my favorite ones are actually the gospel lineup.
In Nigeria, there are gospel lineups.
A lot of them.
Really?
Oh yeah.
All we see is Davido and Tiwa Savage and Yemi Alade. Those are the people that
we
see.
By taste.
Okay.
Goes by taste.
Okay.
Yeah, but they have a lot of them actually across the lines, whether it's gospel, whether it's secular. They're very, very talented.
Okay.
But having been here a while, I actually see a lot of borrowing from each other.
Yes.
Times
yes.
when I listen to a new release here,
uh-huh.
and I think I hear some Southern African or
yes,
Zimbabwean.
Yes, there's a lot of linkage.
Which is, there's nothing wrong with that.
Which
and on the other side, we are doing the same also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but they are very good. They're very good. Mm-hmm. They have developed their skills and they're very international. They travel.
But you still haven't given me one person that you really like from Nigeria who sings or who acts or who does whatever.
There's a lady called Sinach.
Sinach. Oh, yes, yes, I know of her.
There you go.
Yes,
you
I know
her. Gospel music.
Yes, of course. No, I do. I mean, we're a Christian nation in Zimbabwe, so you are bound to know a lot of gospel. Because even in school, it's you read the Bible, you say the Lord's Prayer, we go to Christian schools, Catholic schools, so we are bound to know of the gospel singers. But talking about that, I mean, obviously Zimbabwe is a very young nation, with a lot of young people in Zimbabwe, and when you look at Nigeria, the entertainment industry is run by young people also. Nollywood is the second best film producing industry in the world after Hollywood, and there's Bollywood, and Nollywood is right there, and it's an African industry.
Exactly.
What is it that we can sort of extract as Zimbabweans and also try to put in our own system? Because we're a young nation, and the entertainment industry in Nigeria is run by young people. So what can we exchange? What can we borrow from each other?
I think there's a lot. To begin with, if you go to generations earlier than yours, in school, people were not encouraged to do anything other than read your books,
do
your English and mathematics and all that. In other words, issues of art, drawing, painting, poetry, musical instruments were not encouraged. All right? And I think that's a starting point. We need to allow every young person and every child to actually express themselves with whatever God has invested in them, whatever talent, whatever inclination, and to actually say, you can make a living out of it. So I think that is one area.
People
must be encouraged in that
encouraged,
area of inclination. But having said that, there are issues now of piracy. At the end, at the other end of the production line, which even Nigeria is fighting against, because that is what tends to erode whatever
the
industry and the income of the individuals involved in that industry. So yes, it is a big industry here, and there's a lot of investment in it. But we also have to know that Nigeria is huge.
No, it's
so
huge.
They have the capacity to produce, but they also have the capacity to consume what they produce.
All right.
So they are
with
a huge market.
200 million plus. Exactly. That's a lot.
They're a huge market on their own.
Which is a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Before you think about exporting to other countries, so that's a big plus for them.
Yes.
They've also taken a lead. So the market in the rest of the world is actually kind of looking out for what's the next release and
from
so forth.
Nigeria.
Exactly, because they already have cut a niche for themselves. So there's a lot to learn from them, and I must say, a few Zimbabweans that have every now and then come across. And work together with Nollywood, and they've created good space for themselves, developed themselves. So I think there's that partnership.
Also, it's a full will, so the partnership is maybe what we do not have in
Zimbabwe. Okay. We need to work on that. And also, I think people in any given industry should also, you know, kind of work together.
Yes, true. True.
Whether it is the painters, the sculptors, musicians, I think we need that networking so that people actually support one another. I must say, we have begun to see that.
People who are in the
film industry back home,
they
do come together. They have the annual activities. People in the music industry and so forth. So yeah, it is coming up. But in the case of Zimbabwe, I think we will need strong anti-piracy laws, because a lot of people who have worked very hard and produced beautiful products end up not getting anything out of it because it is, you know, pirated, and before you know it, it's being sold on the market, and other people are making money out of it. And that actually has to be worked on, because it discourages those wine
to continue. I think it also goes back to what we're talking about, formalizing this industry, because
exactly.
The entertainment industry has came in as an informal sector. So maybe formalizing it, like what you're saying in Nigeria, there's you know, there's systems within the entertainment industry, so people are able to capitalize from that. They're able to earn a living from whatever, and to be protected also.
That's correct.
So maybe it's just a matter of formalizing our industry back in Zimbabwe.
I think we need to do
and
that.
Make it work.
Yeah, I think we need to do that.
Which is because we need more people like Oliver Mtukudzi. Shoni Somaila, they passed on.
So rest in peace.
We need more of those.
Absolutely. There's no doubt that we have excellent talent and gifting, and I mean, there's a lot of young people that are coming up and who are doing very, very well. And some have started to, you know, show off their strategy even abroad.
Yes, they have.
Which is very good. So I think we need to promote that.
And obviously, when you talk about Nigeria and Zimbabwe, one thing that always comes in common is the education. Nigeria is like the largest diverse, universities also in the Lagos state. And when you talk of Zimbabwe, we're very much pro-education.
We are
like the number one, we're still number one, right?
In terms of literacy, yes.
Literacy was still number one. Yes, on the continent.
Yes.
What can be tweaked in terms of our education to also make it more, for it to work for us?
Well, to a large extent, I'm sure our education is already working for us.
But is it practical?
It is practical. I must say, I meet Zimbabweans outside their home space, excelling and doing very well. I also know that in many markets, even outside Zimbabwe, Zimbabweans are being headhunted. Yes. So we are doing well. We're doing well as Zimbabweans. And in fact, some of our institutions back home would have collapsed a long time ago had we not continued to produce people that are able to, you know, cover the gap,
yes,
considering the brain drain that we talk about.
Mm.
But it is important that we continue to improve, particularly our curriculum.
Yes, of course.
I think it has been the complaint of many leaders back home to say that after we have trained geologists and metallurgists and bankers and so forth, very few of them will come together and say, we want to run a mine.
All right.
Many of them will run off
and
seek employment.
So we need to be entrepreneurs.
Exactly. I think we need to do something about our curriculum.
Okay.
So that we bring about people that can create employment for themselves and for others. We need more entrepreneurs. So I think our curriculum has to address that right from the bottom. And I think in terms of our universities, the various people in various industries can actually make a difference. For example, companies that are in engineering can make contributions to engineering laboratories and workshops
in the
universities. Those that are in the hotel and tourism industry can do the same in our colleges and contribute, so that our products from the various institutions are actually relevant to the job market. So I think the whole, as a nation, we have a contribution to make. So I believe that people in various industries can actually team up with our training institutions, particularly the tertiary ones, so that we have an impact, and we know that what comes out of NIL is relevant to the industry itself. Otherwise, we will continue depending on, you know, expatriates, for example, which is not that good, because you are giving away jobs that otherwise would have been taken by your own nationals. So I think we need to keep doing that, even if it means our people might keep getting jobs elsewhere. At least that is still okay, that we have equipped our people and are able to run industries in various sectors.
But at the present moment, there's a lot of I think there's a lot of rise of entrepreneurs in Zimbabwe. I think we're hustlers. That's one thing that we cannot run away from. We are hustlers, we're hard workers, we're survivors, because life itself has taught us a lot of things as Zimbabweans. And I see that a lot also in Nigerians, because everywhere you go, there's Nigerians everywhere.
Right.
And they are working there. Right. In Zimbabwe, they have shops, they have barbershops, they have all these places that
they're
running.
True.
So we cannot take away the hard work in Zimbabweans,
The
survival spirit in Zimbabweans, and just the perseverance to keep going on, because Zimbabweans have that, and despite everything else that's going on around,
we
still are pushing and moving forward.
Absolutely. I would say I have seen similar sanctions imposed on other countries and I've literally seen economies collapse completely.
But ours is...
I must say, whatever stage we are at, uh-huh. Zimbabweans have overcome the sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Zimbabweans have, you know, out of some of the attributes you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
I think our hunger for education and training, our honesty and integrity, our hardworking ethos, I think a lot of that has really helped us. We as Zimbabweans, we are proud people.
Mm-hmm.
We respect ourselves. A lot, and so we expect a lot out of ourselves, and I think that makes us different people. I think
definitely,
it has been said at every part of our history that our people are our most important resource.
We are,
therefore, and I think we have invested very well in our resources, in our people, and that's my hope that we'll continue doing that, and we don't lose that thrust. That's what makes us different.
It's
both
amazing.
At home and abroad, wherever we go.
It's incredible. Any last words to someone or something that you feel, listen, if you're in Zimbabwe and you want to visit Nigeria, or if you're in Nigeria and want to visit Zimbabwe, this is a must, because you have had the best of both worlds, you know, having stayed in Zimbabwe, having stayed in Nigeria, so you're more informed than anyone else.
Well, Nigeria is a very interesting place. I think one of the most frequented cities is of course Lagos,
yes,
which is the biggest. I think there you have almost anything, whether you're talking about industry, whether you're talking in the upmarket shopping mall,
yes,
or you're talking about the curio shops and the crafts, you're talking about the hotels, lodges, you are talking about markets as we know them, whether you're talking about vegetables, fruit, or your material,
yes,
for your attires. Lagos has it all. There's a lot of good tourism too. Calabar is one city that has the Calabar Carnival every year around about December.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, we actually have had people from Zimbabwe
come through.
End of the year. And in the case of exchanging with Zimbabwe, I would say one of our major concerns in Zimbabwe, especially regarding tourism, has been that the average age of a tourist going to Zimbabwe is a little too high.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, you find the older people doing sightseeing.
So where are the young people?
We have to catch them. So
we're a young nation after all.
Absolutely. We need a lot more activities like bungee jumping, wild water rafting.
Yes.
It is the hope that now, of course, in the special economic zone in Victoria Falls, I hope we'll have, you know, funnier and more interesting things. Maybe even ice skating and stuff like that, because that's what draws a lot of people. But the end of year event, the Victoria Falls Carnival,
yes,
that one has begun.
I attend that every year.
That one has begun to draw a lot of attention.
It's incredible.
From all over the world,
yes.
From all over the world, and even from this part of the world in Nigeria.
Really?
I think the youths here have caught on.
Wow.
Every time we have inquiries, and we are definitely promoting that. And like I said, governments can only establish the frameworks that allow and encourage people to interact.
To exchange,
so between Nigeria and Zimbabwe, I think what we need is the people-to-people connection and link. And like I said, there's a lot to learn from each other. Even in the area of investment. In the area of investment, some of the inquiries from this side have been mostly on mining.
All right.
And we are a big mining country. Agriculture.
Yes.
Because the people here have begun to learn a lot from us.
Yes.
In the area of agriculture, whether it is agri-tech, agro-processing,
agribusiness
in general. They are highly impressed by the fact that our production and processing and packaging works, allow our horticultural products, our floriculture access into the European market, for example, which they have problems with here.
Or to penetrate the European market.
So they are highly impressed, and that we have so many inquiries of people that actually would want to come to Zimbabwe.
That's incredible.
Invest into an ongoing concern,
whether
it is vegetables or fruit,
grow
it for export, and in the process gain the experience,
so
that they can then come here and perhaps replicate
the same thing. Yeah. But obviously with the climate, it might not just work this.
Yeah, yeah, they'll pick on a number of things that can actually do work this side. Yeah, climate-wise, they are really blessed this side. Yeah, they're really blessed. Yeah.
No, but it's hot, Ambassador.
It is hot. It is hot, but you know, you go to the north, there's no, virtually every part of this country grows something.
Okay, that's good.
And they do very, very well. Mm-hmm. So yeah, virtually in every sector, there's a lot that we can learn from each other. And
right.
I'm happy we are beginning to see a lot of that.
Wow, ladies and gentlemen, there we have it. His Excellence Love Mo Mazemo. He was here on the Gilmore TV Vibe on Clip Central. So please make sure that you tell everybody else that this is the program that you listen to every Friday at 1 p.m. If you want to know what's happening off Zimbabweans across the world, and here we're in Abuja in Nigeria. Thank you so much, Ambassador, for joining me.
Thank you.
I appreciate, and I hope to bring more people and more Zimbabwean voices on the show. Until next week, same time, same place. God bless and enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Heals our wounds, it heals our wounds. All that's broken, it makes right. I see black when you see.
This is CliffCentral.com.